Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, hello. Hello, hello, hello. It's Nicole. How are you? I'm good. I am happy to be here with you today. I had such a fun time talking to Joe, who is my interviewee today. So Joe and I go back a ways because Joe was my first. Oh, by the way, hello, it's Nicole. I'm sorry. I'm so like all over the place today. I'm Nicole Sachs. And this is my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. Okay, now that we've gotten that out of the way, Joe Tugnon was my very first, testimonial, way before I had a podcast, way before I knew the scope of what I was planning to do with this work. I was still in private practice. I was still just doing my best every day to figure out how to get this message out there. And I started a YouTube channel, and which is still alive and kicking and helping people all the time. But ever since I started the podcast, I stopped doing the YouTube because I just cannot do both. And plus I do Instagram and IGTV and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, Joe got in touch with me long, long ago and said, "Hey, Nicole, I'm a crazy ass success story. Do you want to help inspire people with my story?" And I was like, "Hells yeah." Because the way I began this whole journey professionally is I used to sit on Dr. Sarno's alumni panel at NYU in New York City. And that was how I would help inspire others. So I was like, "Yes, let's do it." And Joe ended up making two videos, one which was his success story and the other one was which is his follow-up, which are both on my YouTube channel, The Cure for Chronic Pain with Nicole Sachs, LCSW, and under Truth Warriors, and you'll see Joe. So anyway, I was thinking of Joe recently. I know he is a resounding and enduring success story. He's also a musician who does beautiful music. And so I reached out to him and I said, "Hey, Joe, you want to come on the Modern Day Podcast?" And he said, "Yes, I would." So he and I just had such a great conversation. I just love talking to him. I love his energy. He really gets it. He pulls no punches. And I think you're really going to enjoy it. So that's my interview today. If you're new to my work or if you need more guidance or if you're struggling, just go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Click on the resources tab. I've got great stuff there, frequently asked questions, a glossary of terms, a how-to journal speak page, and lots more. And I believe when this podcast airs, we are going to be right up against the heels of Omega, my in-person Omega retreat at the Omega Institute for Holistic Studies in Rhinebeck, New York. If you want to come, there'll probably be a few days left to sign up. Click on the retreats tab of my website or look up my name, Nicole Sachs, at eomega.org. All right, my lovey loves, I hope today brings you great joy and presence, and I hope that you are able to make the most out of your moments. And if you struggle, just know that I am here to help you. You are not alone, as is evidenced by all these incredible people who come on my podcast to tell their stories. And without further ado, I bring you a wonderful story with my friend, Joe. Hey, everybody. So today I am here with Joe. Welcome, Joe.
Welcome. Thank you.
So Joe is my original Truth Warrior. So for those of you who have been fans since the beginning, Joe's video was one of the first videos I ever put up on YouTube of a testimony. Actually, I think it was the first. Yeah, the first video I ever put up on YouTube as a testimonial. It was years ago. And over the years, people have just commented here and there on the real beauty of Joe's self-expression and being able to tell his story. And I just was thinking about him lately and I reached out and I said, "Hey man, you want to come on the podcast? Because this is probably a lot of people that have never heard you." And he accepted. So I'm so excited to have you here, Joe. And
just take it away. Tell us a little bit about your story so you can reacquaint me and our audience. And then we can talk about a catch up, which I have no idea. And I can find out how you are since.
That would be great. Yeah, I look forward to the catch up probably more than the story itself, because I've told it so many times. But I'm happy to say it again for those that haven't heard it. So I'm going to be brief, but I'll try to hit the most important highlights.
Awesome.
So for the last 30 years or so, until last year, I was working as an IT engineer doing computer work and a musician on the side, you know, nights and weekends. I play guitar and I sing. And about, 5 years ago now, 6 years ago, I had a pinnacle of chronic pain in my back. Before then I had on and off chronic pain in my back for, I don't know, maybe 10 years or so. And it was the kind of pain where if I was, you know, walking around on vacation or, at, you know, in Disney World or just going to a shopping mall, anywhere that required like, you know, a long walk would really hurt my lower back. And I would have to regularly squat down or sit down, while the rest of the normal world walked on by, and it drove me crazy.
Oh, I remember. But I remember those squats. I had them too.
And when I see other people squatting, I'm like, ooh, I wonder if he has TMS. So anyway, that went on for about 12 years. And in all that time, I could never even think of running. I could walk, but I absolutely could not run because the pain in the small of my back was just too severe if I tried doing that. So this was, you know, my normal. And about 6 years ago, I had an incident happen where I was picking up a computer server, taking it out of its box. I propped it up on one knee and shook the box to get the styrofoam off. And at that point, I had what everybody in the world calls a back pull.
Yeah.
So it was that sharp, sudden knife in the back sensation, stopped me dead in my tracks, you know, took all the air out of my lungs. And I was in Texas, so I'm from Miami. And so I'm in another state. I couldn't really do anything about it. I had just started working for that weekend. It was a work trip and I had to get through it. So I kind of, you know, mustered up all the energy I had to just kind of, you know, grin and bear it. So I did that for the weekend. I got back home, and for the next few months, my back went from painful to numb. And the scariest part was that I had a pain going down my right leg that was really numb. And it would cause me to stumble sometimes when I was walking. So I had surgery for it and it fixed the leg, but my lower back pain was even worse after the surgery. And for the next couple of years, it just...
And let me just interrupt, because I have to do always with back surgery. I am certain, just because of the amount of times that I've done this, that the fact that it quote unquote fixed the leg was not necessary to have back surgery. What happens with TMS often is when we have something like surgery or any sort of an invasive sort of life-altering procedure or... you know, just anything we do that is enough to shake up the nervous system and, you know, to allow it to have a little shift, things like that happen. But what you're saying is very typical, which is the pain intensifies in one area or it moves or eventually the other pain comes back. Because I just always want to make sure people understand this surgery that people are having is not the reason that the pain shifts.
Correct.
Yeah.
In hindsight, it wasn't necessary.
And I need to
actually re-time frame myself, because the surgery was actually in the beginning of my chronic back pain. So this was going about 12 or so years ago. What happened 5 or 6 years ago is the injury got re-aggravated, same spot where I was carrying a couple of guitars, nothing too strenuous. I sneezed. And bam, that same familiar back pain that I had before the surgery just came shooting right back.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you for reframing that, because it's so important. I can't tell people how much I feel that back surgery does not solve back pain.
Right.
It may indeed take away the disc or whatever. I'm not a surgeon. I don't know. But I have walked this walk for so many years, Joe, and your story is so typical, which is, yeah, you get the surgery, but eventually the pain comes back exactly the same or worse or in another place.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And actually, that's what started happening. The pain was getting worse. And at one point, the what I call the rock bottom, I was in the bathroom urinating. I finished. I put my hand up against the wall because I couldn't stand up straight while I was urinating because the back pain was so bad. And as soon as I put my hand back down, I had what can only be described as like an electrical shock go through my lower back, and it absolutely paralyzed me. It sucked, again, all the air out of my lungs, and I couldn't breathe. And I had to take baby steps back to the bed. And after I caught my breath, I got up slowly, and I'm on a second story here because I have a two-story townhouse. So I had to get back downstairs to let my wife know that I was going to need to go to the hospital because the pain was too much. And that's when the magic happened. When I went to take, I say that sarcastically, I went to take my first step down the stairs, and I got a spasm in my lower back that was literally the most painful sensation of my life. And I'm 56 going on 57. So this was absolutely excruciating. I was on the floor. I couldn't move my pinky. My whole body was just entirely paralyzed by this pain. And I had to summon my wife to get up, go up the stairs, call 911, prop my head up with a pillow and another pillow under my ankles. And I was in this position where if I moved any part of my body 1 centimeter, that electrical shooting pain would come back. So then it got even worse because as she was calling 911, that electrical shock sensation started happening intermittently on its own, even without me moving. So this was a whole new level of experience I had never gone through before. It was one thing that you're in a certain position and it causes pain.
Right.
But it's another thing when your brain just starts firing on its own and you're not doing anything. And that was really scary. So I told her between my really thin breath that, you know, let the paramedics know I might pass out before they get here. So let them know what's going on. And I was really, I felt like I was just barely holding on to consciousness because the pain was so acute. And I hate that word, by the way, because there's nothing cute about acute pain, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, so the paramedics
wait,
got
there. I need to say something. First of all, this story is like got me on the edge of my seat. It's as if I've never heard it before, but I have. But you're reminding me of, I just love, because we can look at this in the rearview mirror, so I'm allowed to love it. I love these examples of how severe TMS can be.
Oh, yeah.
Because people don't understand that the body can experience this acute pain, to use your least favorite word because it's just true. Mm-hmm. They don't understand that the body can experience this extreme pain and it's not harmful. There's nothing physically wrong with you. It's shocking. It's mind-blowing. Yeah,
you feel like you're going to die, really.
Yes. Oh, and I've been there. I've been there. My parents had to carry me to use the bathroom and I was 19.
Yep.
You know, so I have been there. And so what I want to say to anyone listening, especially people who are new to this work, TMS, which is simply another word for the umbrella under which all of these myriad pain syndromes live, is a function of the brain and the nervous system and the protective mechanism that happens when the nervous system switches from rest and repair to fight or flight for a sustained period of time, when it's looking to protect you, when it thinks that you are in such danger that if you feel your emotional world that you might die, it will do anything to stop you. And what Joe is experiencing and sharing with you right now is a very extreme case, but somewhat typical case of the fact that this is what can happen and your body is actually not broken in any way. It's shocking, but it's true. So yeah, I just had to really bring that out. Go on.
Yeah, yeah. So, and again, at this point, I don't know what TMS is. I've never heard of that. So I'm just going through this I'm about to die experience. So I want to try to make a long story short because I'm really excited about talking about what's happened
since I
learned about TMS. So couple of emergency room visits later, I get the MRIs done, and lo and behold, you have a herniated disc. And of course, to me, being a very analytical person, it's like, oh, put two and two together. There you go. I have visible proof that my back is structurally messed up.
Right.
Now, I knew about the herniated disc because that's what I had the surgery on, you know, many years before that. So I figured, oh, it re-herniated, because they warned me when I had my surgery, you know, you could get another herniated disc. You can even have the same disc re-herniated, although it's very unlikely. But I knew there were a bunch of other discs, and with my luck, another one was just bound to herniate with, you know, given enough time. So I figured that's what happened. And sure enough, this one was L4, L5 instead of L3, L4. And I figured, oh, it's just my back, you know, progressively getting worse. So I went to a high-end back specialist hospital, which I won't name, in Miami. And I mean, you could fill it with any name. You're going to have the same risk that I'm about to tell you in terms of not knowing about TMS. And I was given the diagnosis that I had 3 degenerated discs and a herniated disc. The herniated disc was, in their estimation, quote unquote, not impressive. It was more like a bulge. And that really pissed me off, because, you know, I'm sorry that my herniation doesn't impress you, but boy, did the pain impress me, because I couldn't even walk. And
I know. And this is such a travesty of the medical model, because herniated discs don't cause pain.
Well, I didn't know that.
Right. Exactly. You didn't know anything. You're just suffering.
All I knew is I have a herniated disc, and that's where it hurts. So, you know, put two and two together, the herniated disc must be causing the pain. So I went then through the gamut of treatments, from electrolysis to massage to therapy to anti-inflammatories to muscle relaxants to painkillers to ice packs to heating packs to stretches to yoga to, I mean, acupuncture, everything. I mean, if it was something to try, I tried it.
Right.
And this went on for about a year, where nothing was working, and it just psychologically started taking its toll on me. And I got to the point where, pain wise, where I couldn't walk without the assistance of a walker or crutches. And needless to say, I'm not performing my music anymore, because I can't even stand up. So luckily, my day job of IT computer work did have the ability to work remotely from home. So I would, you know, prop myself up in bed with a laptop holder and do my work from my computer. And, you know, that was no fun. I mean, I would much rather, you know, be working my butt off walking around than be in the quote unquote comfort of my bed working from home. It was not comfortable at all. And it was one of those things where I had to start alternating laying down with sitting with walking, because I could not be in any one of those positions for more than 15 minutes without getting the sharp pain in my back. So this includes lying down. So even lying down, which is, you know, you figure your restful position, even that would hurt after 15 minutes. So it was just 24/7 cycling through these 3 things. Needless to say, I'm not sleeping normal. And it's just one of those horrible chasing your tail feelings. Like, there's nothing I can do but just watch time go by. And 20 months later, this went on for 20 months. 20 months later, my mom gets me this book that she heard about called Healing Back Pain.
Ah.
You know? And yes. She didn't read it, but she gave it to me, and I looked at it, and I read the back cover, and I was like, you know, Dr. Sarno, this, that, mind, body, this, that. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. Threw it on the shelf. Meanwhile, my wife picks up the book. My poor wife, she's so desperate to see me get better. And she starts reading it, and I'm like, okay, all right, hold on a second. If she's going to read it, I have to read it. Now, realize at this point, the very last thing the doctors had told me was there was one more procedure that they could try, and it was called a discography. And it required, before doing the discography, which is basically removing a disc, it required a discogram, which meant they had to go in there with needles, go into 3 different vertebra to determine which one was the weakest disc before doing the actual procedure. So it was going to be a, and they told me it's going to be a painful test before you even do the procedure. And at this point, I was like, I gave up. You know, it was one of those things where it's like, I'm tired of being poked and prodded. And I asked the doctor, and to his credit, I will tell you that he was supportive of my decision. I said, I need a mental break from all of this testing because I literally can't take anymore. I've never been a suicidal person, but I could understand why other people would get suicidal inclinations after going through this much pain. So I told him, look, for my mental health, I just need a break. And he said, no problem. If this was life-threatening, I would tell you. It's certainly not life-threatening. Take your time, do what you got to do, and then we're here when you're ready for the procedure. It was at this point that I encountered the book. So I start reading Healing Back Pain, and I didn't get through chapter one before I just started crying, because this guy that I never heard of, it's like he was living with me and he knew everything that I was going through.
Isn't it just amazing? It's so crazy.
The connection was just unbelievable. So he's describing my symptoms and my experiences as if he was me. And I said, how does this guy know so well? So he had my attention. So one thing that caught me in that first chapter, and it's something that I tell people, is the single central point of TMS therapy. And if you miss this point, you're never going to reach 100% healing from chronic pain. But if you don't miss this point, you can, and in my case, I did, and anybody that's listening to this, you can reach 100%, not 99%, which is what I'm going to get to, which is what I'm really dying to get to, but 100% free from chronic pain for the rest of your life. And that one key point is when Dr. Sarno says, the people that had faith in the diagnosis healed. And the people that didn't had the problem. It's belief.
Yes.
And this is not to be confused with blind faith where you just believe something because. However, it's not entirely unrelated, because the only thing that got me to this point of being able to put my faith in what Dr. Sarno was going to say in the rest of the book was an absolute utter desperation. I had no choice, and I tried everything else under the sun. So I figured, hey, I've got nothing to lose. Worst case scenario, I spend a few days reading a $7 book and life goes on. Well, by the time I finished reading the book, 80% of my pain vanished. Like it was just a miracle. And I put in one of my videos that, you know, it reminds me of what it must have been like for those of you that have a Christian faith to encounter a healer like Christ, where all of a sudden your pain is just not there anymore. And you just can't, there's no medical explanation for it. It's just gone. So I took this faith thing really seriously. And I said, I'm going to put my faith in this doctor that I've never heard of, because that first chapter let me know that this guy knows what I've been through. And he's telling me in one chapter what a dozen doctors and therapists in the last, so many years of my life couldn't tell me. And this guy just comes in out of nowhere and puts his finger right on the problem.
But I have to say, there is a medical, I mean, I understand the bridge you're building when you were talking about Christ, but I will say in this case, there is actually a medical reason for your pain to go away 80% after reading the book. And that is because of brain science. Because Dr. Sarno always said, my methods are more scientific than surgery. When you get your brain and your nervous system from fight or flight to rest and repair, the pain signals stop firing. The only reason for the pain signals is to protect you from the things that you were scared of, which was for you, most of your fear was around the pain.
Oh yeah, yeah. And realize also, like I said, I'm an analytical person. When I saw that he was getting a success rate of like 90%, I was like, well, that's a lot higher than any of the back surgery success rates that I'm hearing, you know, which were about 50, 60%. So he had my attention. He had my faith, and that's what I needed. So by the time I finished reading the rest of the book, I reached 80%. And this went on for, I don't know, maybe a year or two. But in that year or two, my life was 80% back, you know, and I even started running. And that's something I couldn't do even before my first surgery. So that was a real big milestone when my wife and I ran our first half marathon together. And I just couldn't believe that, you know, not too long ago, I was using crutches and a walker just to walk around the house. And here I was, you know, running 13.1 miles and feeling great. And it was just, you feel like you're transported into somebody else's body, you know, like unfairly, like whose body did I just hijack? And I'm living a full life now. It was that amazing.
It's the way
now,
it goes.
Now the only thing that was missing was I still had recurring, you know, mild, but recurring back pain. And every now and then I would get a really annoying flare up, but I knew after reading that book and after learning how TMS works, I knew that the trick that my brain was playing on me, the game was over. It was never going to have the opportunity to do that again, because as Dr. Sarno calls it, it's like a spy operation that gets exposed. Once the spies are exposed, they're screwed, because it's like, we know your tricks now and you're not going to catch us off guard again. So I started telling people, and it was kind of annoying to me, and I'll get to that in a second, that, you know, I'm doing great. I'm doing much better. You know, I'm confident I'm never going to have this kind of back pain again. But at the back of my mind, I knew, but there's still this, you know, 10% that I can't quite get rid of, where I still have flare-ups once in a while. And I knew it was never going to be another 20-month, you know, chronic thing. But I started to have to qualify by telling people I'm chronic pain-free. I couldn't tell them I was pain-free, but just chronic pain-free. And this really bothered me. So the first step on getting from 90% healing to 100% healing was actually you, Nicole. And I remember I emailed you about this, and I told you my situation. And I'll never forget what you told me. It was as influential as reading Sarno. And you basically told me, claim the victory. You're already there. You know, stop looking at the calendar, because I was measuring, you know, how long it's going to take. And am I at 90%, 91%, 92%, back to 90%. I was overanalyzing. And you basically told me, claim the victory. You're there. You know, you're done. You know, you found the secret, and that's it. So it was one of these, you know, Your wings are strong enough, jump out of the nest, you can fly now. And that was it. That was the beginning of my 100% experience. And I was able to start telling people without white lying. I told them when they said, how are you doing? I didn't say better. I didn't know great. How are you doing? 100%. They're like, wow, how can, that's amazing. And, you know, to this day, one of the things that, and this was something I wanted to ask you about, is how you deal with family and friends that actually saw the miracle right in front of their eyes, and still they just can't believe, you know?
I know. Well, people are programmed, you know, we have to do a lot of unlearning in order to believe this. But I have a question for you, Joe, because I know there's a part of this that I feel like I'm missing.
Okay.
When, before, I remember that email where I told you, you know, face to the sun, you know, arms to the wind.
Yes. Beautiful visual.
I remember that. But before that, so that was your second video. But before that, your first video, you did do the work, didn't you? Didn't you do your journal speak? Didn't you ever like really do the work? Or was this only a book cure? You did.
Again, when I finished reading the book, I'm estimating that I got to like 80%. The way I got from 80% to 90%, and again, you got to take that with a grain of salt, because we're just kind of making these arbitrary scales, but 80% to 90% was strictly because of journal speak. If it wasn't for the journal speak, I would have been stuck at the 80% mark. The journal speak, what it allowed me to do was get in touch with repressed memories and emotions that I had no idea. I knew they were there, but I didn't know how strong they were, because I had never, you know, and I just want to give a quick reminder to people that there's two key characteristics of journal speak that people, for some reason, they can't get through their heads. Number one is you don't keep the journal entry. It has to be something that you literally either shred or delete. You never save it. And there's a psychological reason for that. And the second one that people are pretty good at, but not as good as me, because I'm just uninhibited when it comes to this, is you cannot have a filter.
No.
You have to speak. You have to let that super adolescent voice inside you say whatever it wants to say in whatever words that it wants to say it in. And it's not pretty. It's not nice. It's not something you would ever let anybody hear out of respect for other people. But this is not the time for respect. This is the time for letting that little, that, you know, the id inside of you just have a field day and let all of its tantrums out. And when I did that, the first couple of days, I couldn't believe I literally cried. You know, I'm not really a crier. And I cried just thinking of some of the things that, you know, I went through as a kid, and I never knew it bothered me that much. So, yeah, again, long story short, it went from 80 to 90%, you know, pain-free. So, but then I got stuck at that 90%, and your email was the first step at me getting from 90 to 100. So,
all right, I'm going to recap and then I'm going to unleash you because I know you're okay. So excited to talk about.
I can't wait.
I know. He's so, because I love this about Joe, because your energy is so infectious and you're so excited to live in the solution, which is what, yep, I want people to do. I want people to get excited for what's out there for them once they do what they need to do. So I'm just going to recap, which, mm-hmm, is, we all have different percentages of what it is that gets us. And for Joe, his major, major thing was helplessness and like just being like, what the hell am I supposed to do? I have no idea what's going on. Abject terror, abject hopelessness, because his back was so bad and he had absolutely no idea and the doctors weren't able to really help him. Some people, that is their main problem, and that's why he had an 80% book cure, because as soon as he understood, wait a second here, this is what's going on, that with complete faith, that was enough to bring him that far. Some people are way more caught up in their stored trauma. I would assume, Joe, you have less stored trauma maybe than a person who had maybe severe abuse and neglect or something where they had more journal speak to work through. So I'm just I'm just normalizing this for people so like everyone can find their place in the story. So Joe had all this terror. His pain was excruciating, mind-numbing pain. He figured out what was going on with him. That took away a lot of the pain, which is huge, which is for everyone. Anyone who needs that, that is a huge part of that. Belief. Then he did the work. And he did the work like my original truth warrior that he is. He just went all the way. And he said, I'm going to say everything I need to say. I'm going to destroy it the moment I'm done. So he did the work. Then, yep, he moved into the other very normal place, which is, we're just hanging on. We're hanging on. We don't feel like we can say, I'm really okay. It's a terrifying feeling to say, I'm really okay. It I don't know why it feels so unsafe. And so that's when I said to him, you're never going to feel safe enough to say you're really okay. So just surrender, my friend.
Right.
Just surrender.
Yep.
Arms open, face up. I got this. I give up. Take me. And that's when we really soar. And so now that I've recapped, Joe, say anything you want about how you live today.
Great, because I want to highlight two points that you just reminded me of. First, the single concept in the book that I had to have faith in, which took me from 0 to 80 in one reading, was the truth that herniated discs in and of themselves do not cause pain. This was a monumental mind shift, because I had gotten drilled into me by the experts that was the source of my pain. And when I see it with my own eyes on an MRI, that just reinforced it.
Yeah.
So it really took a leap of faith for me to say, you know what? This guy knows me so well, and I'm going to put my faith in it. And if he says that a herniated disc is what he calls in one of his videos a normal abnormality.
Yes, sir.
And it's like a gray hair, you know?
Yeah.
That really connected with me. And I saw, and I recommend for people that want to get a good laugh, listen to the interview that he did with Howard Stern. I don't know if you ever heard those, but God, they're funny.
Oh, I never heard. You'll have to send me the link. I don't know where I can find
God.
That.
I don't even want to give away like the funniest part of it, because there's something that Howard
just tell
went
us,
through.
Just tell
he
us.
Went, no, he, so he went through chronic back pain, and he had to be on the floor of his studio sometimes when he was doing his show. And he had Dr. Sarno on the show, and he pays a compliment to him. I don't know. I guess I'll, whatever. I don't want to ruin it because it's just so damn funny.
No,
but
it's okay.
He just says, he says something to Sarno that makes Sarno kind of embarrassed. And he says, "Oh, Howard," I'm going to leave it at that because I really don't want to ruin it. It's really funny. You
okay.
Hear
all right.
It.
I'll hear it.
So anyway, so the main point in the book, like I said, that I had to put faith in is that herniated discs don't cause pain. This was a big mind shift, but I believed it. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding. I ran not one, but two half marathons and no back pain. And I was like, this is inexplicable except for Sarno. So there you have it. The proof is in the pudding. The second point I wanted to make that you just reminded me of, and it has to do with what happens afterwards, is that fear of even telling people you're okay for the fear that it's going to come back.
And that would there be embarrassing. Something,
and that would be embarrassing. And yeah, gosh, what if, you know, I make a fool out of myself in front of all these people. And I'm sure you went through that on a different level, you know, being a public servant where you're helping other people, you know, what if it happened to you again? But this is where I can't impress on people strong enough. What you learn just when you get that initial revelation of what herniated discs are and what they're not. There's no way you can unlearn that. Once you see it, it's like that spy operation that got exposed. You know, deep down in the you know, rock bottom of your soul, you know that there's not a chance in hell that you will ever fall for that crap again. Your brain has been exposed. And you're never going to go back to that. You know, it would just be like a person that has already gotten, you know, their hand burned by a fire. And it's like, you think you're going to do that again? And some people do, but I'm not. That's for sure.
Right.
So I knew for sure I was never going to have to re-experience chronic pain. Now, that 10% that was left over, that's another story. And that's the excited part that I'm getting to now. So ever since Sarno and Sachs, because they were my two healers, there was that challenge of how do I get to 100%? And the first thing you got to let go of, and this is related to the fear that you just mentioned, is the conviction that we have, that self-sabotaging conviction that, oh, those people might be able to reach 100%, but I'm happy with 90%. I can't get to 100% healing, but hey, who am I to complain? After all, even Sarno himself says, you know, some people reach 90% healing and hey, that's pretty good. But my OCD didn't allow for that. It's like, no, no, no. If there are human beings out there that can reach 100% healing from chronic back pain, I gotta be one of them. I just have to. And there's nothing in my life to parallel this. I always been like, you know, I've always lived by the motto, strive for perfection, but settle for excellence, you know, and don't ever think that you have to be perfect. After all, we're only human, right?
Yeah. And of course, but people who are perfectionistic tend to be very full of TMS.
That's even part and parcel of why we have TMS is because we're perfectionists.
Yeah.
Now, something, and this is one of those things where I can't put it in words. I can only tell you what I believe. Something told me, damn it, I'm going to be one of the ones that reaches 100% healing. And I don't know how, but I just know it's going to happen. And to, you know, give you the punchline before the rest of the joke, it happened. You know, I'm at 100% pain-free. It doesn't mean I never go through pain. Of course, if I work out really hard, if I have a long gig, if I spend all day walking, if I do some gardening, I'm going to have a sore back the next day. But it's normal sore. It's not like that TMS sore where it's like, I can't even tie my shoes, you know? So how I got to that last 100% is not going to be easy for people to hear, but it's in my second video about tough love. And I've gotten a lot of nice responses from it. People that say that this is what was missing. So I hope that I'm able to provide that for some people here today. But there's going to be possibly a larger faction of people that are going to see me as the bad guy. But you know what, Nicole,
you know,
and I know,
Joe,
you can relate to this.
Better you than me.
So I'd rather be the bad guy than be an even worse guy in not sharing what has worked and has taken me to 100%. Because I know for a fact, I'm not the only guy on the planet that can reach 100% healing. And I think a lot of people that are ready to reach 100% don't even know it because they're convinced that, hey, 90% is good enough. And they're happy with that. And they don't want to be ungrateful. And I get it. I get it because that was me for the longest time. But again, my OCD was like, how do you get to 100%? I need to know. So the search began. What can I do after Sarno, after Sachs? What's the missing? There's got to be something. And the first thing I'll say for people that are like me who are obsessive about everything, including how do I get over this pain, is there's another book. I forgot the guy's name. Gosh, this is terrible. And I mentioned it in my video. It's a real thick book. It's
Steve Ozanich?
Thank you, Steve Ozanich. Yes.
Yeah, The Great Pain Deception.
The Great Pain Deception, yes. Now, what makes this – now, it's not as monumental in my life as Healing Back Pain or Meaning of Truth, but what makes this book good is that it's so thick and full of information that by the time you finish reading it, you're sick of reading about TMS. And yeah, that's important. You want to get sick of reading about TMS because part of getting to 100% is actually letting go of the attempt and the effort of getting to 100%. It sounds ironic, but hear me out and hopefully it'll make sense.
I'm with you. All right, it's giving up, essentially.
It's essentially giving up, but there's another piece to it that I don't know if you're going to want to hear, but you're going to hear it. So here we go. One of the things that really occurred to me in reading the Ozanich book is he mentioned how it's very easy for people to become addicted, in a sense, to the sharing and the community and the talking about your symptoms with other people that have gone through it. And you know how it is. You find camaraderie in other people going through the same thing. And make no mistake, that was an essential part of my own journey. Watching other people's testimonials, being on the Facebook groups, you know, doing different programs. This you had a sense of belonging that you know, who doesn't want to feel like that? But that will only take you, for some people that might take you to 100% and more power to them. For me, it didn't. And that was the missing key. I literally had to, and I like to use the word graduate. I had to graduate from the school of shared TMS community. And what that means is you got to get to the point where not only don't you need ice packs and heating packs and antidepressants and anti-inflammatories and reading yet another book and doing yet another this and another that. You got to get to the point where you don't even need to talk about it with other people anymore, because not because you're trying to force yourself to be okay. On the contrary, it's because you're already okay. And if you keep talking about it, you're going to keep the pain in the back of your mind, and it's not going to go away 100%. It'll go away 90%. And if that's good for you, hey, I'm not criticizing anyone, but you got to get to the point where your wings are strong enough to fly on your own, even without the nest of the community that helps you get to there. And that's the tricky part, you know, because I've seen people, and I've seen it, and I'm just calling it like I see it. I've seen people on these forums that you can literally divide into two types. One is the type that's there helping other people, sharing their experiences. And the other are the type that they're just constantly looking for help and wanting to share their problems. And I noticed that the main difference between people that move on and people that don't are the ones that cling to the suspicion that there's still something structural going on.
Yeah.
There's still something that's not really pure TMS. And those are the ones that are trapped in that last 10%. So I'm here to tell you what you might not want to hear, but you're going to hear it. If you really want to get to 100% pain-free, you actually have to get to the point where you can graduate from even sharing it with other people. Now, I can't overemphasize that you need those other people for a time. There is a time and a place for that, and that could be a few weeks, a few months, a couple of years. Everybody's different. But for me, I was in the groups and reading more about TMS for about a good year, I would say, before I realized, and your email was what got me started on this path. I realized that in order to graduate, you know, quote unquote, from TMS community, And that's a good way of looking at it. It's a beautiful, important thing, but it's not meant to be there permanently in your life. In order to graduate from it, you have to kind of give yourself the diploma because nobody's going to give it to you. And it's not until you realize this for each individual self that and I'll speak for myself. Like I said, if somebody else is able to reach 100% pain-free, you know, standing on their head, more power to them. What did it for me after Sarno, after Sachs, after Ozenich, after the community was letting go of everything. That's what 100% means, everything. So that's the end of my story. And I'm sorry for the tough love at the end. And at the same time, I'm not sorry because people need to hear this. There's so many people that are literally addicted to sharing their stories, which again, you have to do at the beginning. But at one point, you have to graduate. And I got to give a shout out to Nicole here, to everybody listening. Nicole was like a great mom to me because you never pulled me back into the group. Once you saw that I was, you know, kind of on my own, you kind of let me spread my wings to fly. And I urge you to just keep doing that. Get all the chicks that you have in your nest and start, you know when they're ready, and they might know when they're ready. Give them that gentle nudge so they can just, you know, take the chance, jump out of the nest and start flying. Because yes, 100 times, amen, there's no going back. I mean, once you experience a chronic pain-free life, there is nothing that's going to take you back there. So there you have it.
Well, first of all, thank you.
All right.
Okay. First of all, thank you. Second of all, I actually am not offended even in the slightest by what you're saying, because I agree with it 100%. And when you wrote me that email, it was really cute because you wrote me that email and you're kind of like, I'm really sorry. I'm just like going to step back and not come to the group anymore. And I was like, damn, yeah. Of course you're not. Like, bye-bye. See you right. Later. And you know, I think that one of the things, so I've been studying a lot of Ram Dass. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but mm-hmm. He's one of my spiritual teachers. And one thing he says is every method is a trap, but you need to be trapped in it for it to work. So right, that's right. Exactly what I hear you saying, which mm-hmm. is we have to, first of all, accept that every method is a trap. And then we have to accept that you need to get trapped in it for it to work. But then the last thing he always says about methods, and when he's talking about methods, he's talking more about like devotional practices and meditation and whatever, mm-hmm. or having a guru or whatever, you know, because that was his path. But mm-hmm. what he says is every method is a trap. You need to get trapped in your method for it to work. But hopefully once it's worked, you understand that it's run its course and you don't need it anymore. And yep. So that's exactly what I hear you saying. And I think the end of your story is beautiful because the whole point of this whole thing is go live your goddamn life.
Exactly.
Goodbye.
Amen to that. You got it.
Like, go bye-bye now. Live your life. And I think one of the only reasons that I personally get TMS that continues to run through me, and it doesn't bother me because it's just sometimes you feel things in your heart and sometimes mm-hmm. you feel things in your body. So I'll get a mm-hmm. TMS symptom.
Oh,
I'll acknowledge
point.
It. Yeah, great I'll acknowledge point. It and I'll let it go. But I think one of the reasons that happens is I have to spend every day of my life in the middle of this.
Yep.
And it's what I choose, and it's my privilege and my pleasure and my joy. But I think if I didn't do this work for a living, most likely I would have almost never any pain of that sort at all.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That's okay for me. That's okay for me. But I do agree with Joe that, you know, this is a process that you need to work through until it's done, until there's no charge left. But then, you know, get up and walk away.
That's the only way. And if you don't take that last step, be happy with your 90% because that's as far as you're going to get. So
and
I wanted
listen.
To say one last thing. I don't know if we have time.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead.
You got the juices flowing here. You said something that reminded me. And I wanted to ask you this even before we started talking. How have you dealt with, in particular, family and friends that, you know, even though they see this miracle right in front of their eyes, they still – you know, they don't want to believe that it's they still think there's something structural. They're still super cautious. And you know, when they, God, I can't even go up and down the stairs holding something without somebody saying, be careful, you know, or be careful when you pick that up, you know, bend at the knees, do all these, what Dr. Sarno calls nocebos, you know, the opposite of a placebo. where it's like, you know, thinking if you do this, it's bad for you when it's not. It's one of those things where I just, it drives me nuts because, you know, I'm a walking proof that this is real, you know, and, you know, it's just, I just walk away sad. You know, I don't know if you've found an effective way of dealing with other people's skepticism, but that I haven't figured out yet.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have many times over. And the best answer I can have for that is, well, it's twofold. The first is, this work is a program of attraction, not promotion. So it's more about people looking at me and thinking, I want what she has. And so I don't care what is said, you know, in the 40 years that I've lived so far, X number of years, that tells me that this is impossible, right? So like sometimes it just becomes so exhausting to do things that don't work that you look over at someone doing something that does work and you go, you know what? Screw it. I don't care. I want what that person has. I'm doing what they do and I'm accepting it. So that's one part of the solution.
Okay.
The other part of the solution, quite frankly, in terms of like people saying, oh, you know, watch it, don't lift that or whatever, because that did happen to me for a while. I mean, it hasn't happened to me in many years because people like know that I will laugh at them. But right. It's really having a lot of the two C's, confidence and compassion, because okay. I have tremendous 100% confidence. So when people say stuff like that, I go, oh, I'm sorry. There's like nothing about that I need, but thank you so much. And having right. so much compassion.
See, I wish I could say it as sweetly as you do.
Well, because
I'm fine. I don't need it. I haven't had back pain in 5 years. You know, it reminds me of that Friends episode when they're, you remember they're moving that couch down the yep. stairs and pivot, he's like, pivot. And I'm like, shut up. Well, it's like, be careful. Shut up.
Well, then Joe, might I gently suggest you should take that to your journal speak, because
that's hell of a good idea.
I have no anger. I have no, when someone tells me something like that or says like, I don't believe you, all I think is what tremendous compassion I have for them that they're stuck in a story that's going to cause them so much discomfort and that I don't need that story. I don't need to defend against that story. I don't need anything except my own lovely, quiet confidence, because this is my life. And, you know, everybody gets their own life. Everybody gets their own story. Everybody gets to follow their own path. And I have absolute respect for that. And I also know that the spiritual work that I've done, that you can't force anyone to be more ready than they are for anything. And that's given me a tremendous amount of compassion as my spiritual journey, because I'm saying to myself, I can't want my children to be more ready to hear certain things. I can't want my mother, my loved ones, you know, it's just going to happen in each person's true readiness. And so I can keep my side of the street clean. You know, I can stay in my square and I can live my best life. And if people look over to my best life and see a shining light and want what I have, then they can do what I do.
That's awesome. And sorry, one more thing, because you just reminded me. It's very important. The spiritual aspect of this is something that I also want to caution people against. This is not, TMS is not something that you need to heal spiritually, nor surgically, nor medically. It's what Dr. Sarno calls knowledge therapy. Mm-hmm. Knowing how it works is all you need. Then you can use your spirituality, and it doesn't matter what spirituality that is, as a reinforcement of something you already know, because at least in the Christian tradition, knowledge is a grace. And that's something that we have to strive to always get. And it's the knowledge of how TMS works that really does the miracle. So I urge people to, you know.
Yeah, my spiritual journey is separate. Separate. And it's
so
not.
That's just, I had to say that just because I part of what I tried was having healers, you know, and I didn't ask for them. It was one of those things where they showed up at my door one day. And they said, you know, are you in pain? Because they saw I was bent over. And they said, can we pray over you? And I said, oh, of course, because, you know, I'm a prayerful person. And they did. And it was, you know, and I had a lot of consolation from it. And I even felt a little better for, you know, for a few hours. And then the pain just came back. And that just, I realized I need to find the knowledge that's missing. And you can turn to, you know, whatever you believe in to, you know, seek that knowledge. So I just want to remind people that it doesn't matter where you are spiritually, What matters is where you are knowledge wise. That's the key to TMS healing. So just wanted to throw that out
there. Think that's actually a great point, because you're right. No matter what you believe, no matter how much love is in your heart, no matter, that stuff is great.
it's all wonderful. But TMS wonderful. Doesn't care. TMS doesn't care what religion you are, what your political leanings are. All it cares is that you have a brain, and the brain is going to play that spy operation on you until you expose it.
And that's because the brain and the nervous system view your repressed emotional world as a greater predator than your physical pain. I say it all the time. And that's why, unfortunately, no one can do the work for you, because your nervous system requires your input. Nobody can. That's why doctors can't help. That's why therapists can't help unless you're doing the work. Right. Now, once you do the work, partnership with a therapist can help. But, you know, I really, really think, Joe, you do a beautiful job of bringing people through this process and really inspiring people, because this is a man who was on the floor with no answers, and look at him now.
It's crazy. I'm gigging 3 times a week. It's my job now. I play for 4 hours at a time. Catch me at joemusician.com. Quick thing.
Yes.
but you know, if you want to see what a pain-free performer looks like, I mean, I have my life back, and I have Sarno, and I have you to thank for. So thank you so much, and you know, keep doing what you're doing, because the learning is just invaluable. It really is.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you again.
It's my honor anytime.
All right, guys. Well, I hope and I know that everyone definitely got a lot out of that conversation. If you wouldn't mind and you're enjoying the podcast, please go over to iTunes and rate and review it. It really does help people find the podcast. And until next time, this has been Nicole Sachs with the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.